with all Shirin today. Our learning today is dedicated to the Lui Nishmat of those who died in the terrorist attack this morning, to the Rifu Shlema of those who were injured, and to the comfort of all Am Yisrael who are suffering as a result. So we're learning now the book Gan Shalom, Gan Emunah, the Garden of Peace. Let's start again. I don't even know where I am. Today, I don't know about you, but I'm just
Walking Dead.
I wouldn't exactly call it that way, but
emotionally.
Right, let's start again. With Hashem, with Hashem's loving grace, we're learning together a new sefer, a new book, Gan Emunah, the Garden of Faith, by Rav Shalom Arush. We started yesterday with the introduction, and now we're going to begin with the opening chapter. So I looked downstairs, by the way, to bring additional books, but downstairs they only have the third version. And the third version is, it's not the same. Even the beginning's very different. So there's no point bringing them up. So anyone who wants to buy themselves a book, then you're doing yourself a favour. Anyone wants to buy anybody else a book and leave them here, that's also a wonderful thing. So, and if not, you can just sit and listen. That's also good. Okay, so Rav Arush starts the book off like this. Starts the book off by explaining why we need Emunah. Why bother? Why are we interested in learning more about faith? Learning more about Emunah. So he starts off like this. Ha'olam hazeh malei b'she'elot. The world is full of questions. Matai tachlit ha'chaim? Mahi ha'tachlit ha'chaim ba'olam hazeh ha'malei b'sever? What's my purpose in life? This life is full of suffering. Lan olam aleh? Where is the world going? What do I expect from the future? What can one expect from the future of mankind indeed? Who is right? What's the right path to take? There's lots of people now think they have the answer. Go on the internet, together with this podcast, you're going to find podcasts on every other topic. How to find happiness, how to find your way in life. Who's right? How do we know who's right? Maybe the Smith system, the Jones way of life is really the answer. How do we know how to truly live correctly? Is it possible to actually find the correct path in life? Maybe it's just not possible. Maybe no such thing exists. Look around, see everyone struggling. Maybe there isn't. There's no such thing. At the end of the day, is it really going to be good for us? Are we going to get to peace? Are we going to get to a place that's good? Or is it just a question of suffering and then that's it? That's the opening questions. He's not finished. Madua Yishnam Shinu and Kokar Kadolim Ein Bnei Adam. Why are there so many differences between people? Why are some people rich, some are poor, some are healthy, some are not healthy? Some find it easy to make parnassah, to make an income, and others have to work day and night and come away with very little. Some people, success seems to come easily into their hands, and other people struggle very hard. And other questions like that. Not only that, those we can say are general questions, even the specific. What about me? Why do I have to suffer myself? For example, a person who finds it difficult to make an income, he's going to look around and say, why am I finding it difficult when so and so, he looks like he's got it easy? Right? Why am I healthy and so is not? Or vice versa. And so too with all the questions in life. And we look at ourselves and we look at other people, and why I have difficulties, and why another person doesn't have my difficulties, it doesn't make sense. There's nothing indicating why me, smart guy, went through university, did pretty well, finding it now very difficult to get a job, to make a living, and someone else, who never even finished school, certainly hasn't read more than 2 books in his life, and most of them probably have pictures in, right? And he's coining it in, he's driving around in Mercedes, and he's living it up. What's going on here? Right? Why one person has to grow, has to live with limitations, right? Some people are born with limitations in their eyesight, limitations in their bodily functions, right? In their brain power. Why should that be the case? Why would God create man limited in some fashion? This one limited in that fashion, that one limited in another fashion. Questions. Why is it easy for one person to find their soulmate, to find a spouse? This guy got married when he was 20, had his choice of women, and his best friend went to the same school, hang out in the same clubs, played football together. He's in his 40s and he's still not married. More and more questions, and each person can have their own list to add to the ones that Rav Arush has just listed. Not only that, there's more questions. Even if we take all of those, there's a further set, a further layer of questions that a person could add. What is going on with my life specifically, meaning what? Yesterday, everything went smoothly. People were nice to me, the job went well, I was successful in my sales, and today nothing's going right. Yesterday I felt good, felt on top of the world, felt strong, felt healthy, felt happy. Today I feel miserable, I feel sad, I feel down, I feel lethargic, didn't want to get out of bed, have no hope for the future. What's changed? I just woke up. Why is today any different? Yesterday I woke up, felt great. Today I woke up just the opposite. Yesterday, my wife thought I was wonderful. She made me my favorite dinner. She was nice to me. She was looking after me very nicely. Today, for no apparent reason, she's screaming at me. What's changed? What's different? Same too with kids. Yesterday, the kids are well behaved. Today they're acting like hooligans, right? Why? We have questions. Ari says like this: Teshuvah achat v'yichida, yesh l'kol ha'shelot. There is one answer, one single answer to all of these questions, to all questions. V'hi, what's the answer? Emunah. There's one answer, and that's emunah, faith. Ki ha'idei emunah. Hatewutz Pashut Muvan Ma'od. Because through Emunah, the solution is simple and very understandable. What's the solution? As follows: Yesh Borei Umanhig La'olam. There is a creator and a leader in charge of the world. V'hu Mashkiach Al Kol Adam Va'adam. And he is in charge, he is supervising, he is directing every single person. With specific direction. It'd be wonderful to have words in English which match these Hebrew words. With specific direction. V'hu koveh lo et ha'tanayim ha'meduyakim. And God is the one that fixes the specific conditions that each individual person is going to live by. Hashem decides whether I'm going to be 6'6" and play in the NFL, or whether I'm going to be 4'10" and not. whether I've got blonde hair and blue eyes, or whether I have a beard, Hashem decides. Just like He decides what physical body I have, so too He decides the rest of it. I don't go around complaining to, feeling bad about myself that I'm not taller, that I don't have longer hair, right? That I can't throw a baseball as far as someone else. Why not? So I know that that's not in my hands. So the same is true with everything else. All the other conditions that I live in were also given to me by Hashem. Hashem also gave me everything else. The family to who I was born into, schooling, the education, the experiences in my life which have shaped who I am. They all came from Him. And they continue. Everything that happens to me is only through Him. He chose it specifically just for me. Which family he's going to be born into, who he's going to marry, how he's going to look, what are going to be his characteristics and his personality, how many children he's going to have, how much money he's going to have, who are going to be his friends, and all the other details, which are as numerous as the sand on the seashore. Right? Every single detail of our life is handpicked by God. Every single one. All for a good reason. Because it's exactly what we need. We can either accept it and be happy with it, or we can be unhappy with it and argue with it. Which is dumb. Because it doesn't help. Right? The parable of the guy who's taking a plane flight, right? Or a guy sitting on a bus, right? And he needs to get to a destination, but he thinks he's in control. He's a passenger, and he thinks he's in control. So he complains and gets upset about what's going on. Like, he looks out the window and he sees, wait a minute, are we going in the right direction? We're going too fast, we're going too slow, we're not going fast enough, we're not going to get there on time. This isn't the best way to get there. Suddenly the way gets bumpy and he's complaining, what's going on? It's now bumpy. Who's driving this plane anyway? Who's right? Who's driving the bus? Who's right? Who's the pilot? Does he know what he's doing? I can't fly the plane and I can't drive the bus. But I have to know that there's someone who does know what he's doing. And I've got two options. I can either sit quietly in my seat and read a book and look out the window and be very happy and just enjoy the journey. Or I can get up and down and complain and be upset and be worried and be angry the whole time. I have that option. I have both options. Either way, I'm going to get from A to B. The driver is taking me from A to B. And I can choose how I react. I can't affect what the driver is going to do. Oh, I can make a request and the driver can change. But me being upset or angry is not going to change anything apart from the fact that I'm upset and angry. I may as well enjoy the ride. The driver knows what he's doing. He's in charge. I've no idea how to fly a plane, even if I think I do. I think I know what's best for my life. Hashem, this isn't good. Right now, what you're doing to me, I wouldn't do this. If I was in charge, I'd have at least an extra $50,000 a year, I'd have an extra 5 kids, I'd have a much larger brain, I'd have whatever. I'd change the rules, because I'm not happy with the current conditions. I don't think they're appropriate for me, but I'm wrong. I don't know anything. I have to accept that He knows what's best for me. And every single condition He put onto my life is exactly what I need for my tikkun. For the reason that I'm here. And not only in general terms, but also in individual terms. In terms of day-to-day life. And every moment, we should know that Hashem is in charge of every detail. And He decides if a person is going to succeed and if he's going to fail. Who he's going to meet today. Who's going to embarrass him or who's going to disgrace him? and every detail of his life day to day, every detail of what happens in my life today is already worked out by God and decided exactly who I'm going to meet and what they're going to say to me. They're going to be nice to me, they're not going to be nice to me. All from him. Every detail. And I can either enjoy and accept it, knowing that it's from him, and knowing that what's happening to me right now is for the best, because it's from him. He arranged it, and he only does things for the good. So even though this thing that's happening to me right now is not so good, in my opinion, I don't like it. Everything, right? I have to wait an extra 5 minutes outside the bathroom because there's too many people, right? I can't get to the coffee before the milk ran out, right? Everything that happens to me is exactly designed by Hashem, because that's what I need right now. For my best, for my ultimate best, we'll have to think about and learn a bit more about why it's going on. But the first thing to know is that it is going on, that it is him, only him. Everything that happens to me all day long is only him. If I succeed or fail, my successes and failures in life are decided by Hashem. And it doesn't matter if I'm learning Torah or I'm trying to do a business deal. Right? If I'm learning Torah, whether I understand the Rashi or whether I have no clue what's going on in this sugya, it's up to him. Right now, you're a bit arrogant. So right now, I'm going to make you not have a clue what's going on this page, because you need to come down a peg or two. Hashem decides. Right now, you need a boost. Right now, I'm going to give you a great chiddush in Torah that you're going to be is going to carry you for the rest of the day, because that's what you need right now. My success is not down to me. It's down to what he gives me. Whether I'm able to learn or not learn. I don't have a special apparatus in my piece of flesh and inside here that knows how to work out Rashi. No such thing. I've got some chemicals bouncing around, but chemicals don't generally know how to work out Rashi. The only one who knows how to work out Rashi is Hashem. So Hashem tells me the answer. He's going to tell me the answer. And if not, I'm not going to get it. I'm not going to... No way I can manufacture it myself. I don't have a computer inside me that's going to manage to work out the answer or not manage to work out the answer. Everything's from Hashem. Everything's from Hashem. You see that in the Gemara. What do you see in the Gemara? In the famous story in Gittin. Masechet Gittin, that goes through the story of how the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. So when the Beit HaMikdash destroyed, there's a longer piece in there. But part of it, the Gadol Ador, the main Torah giant at that time in Yerushalayim, was, I've forgotten. But anyway, he decided that he was going to try and make peace with the army that was invading, that was sieging Jerusalem. There was a group of ruffians in the city called the Birionim who wanted to fight, but the elders knew it wasn't appropriate to fight, and actually it was the best thing was to surrender and keep the temple and it wouldn't be destroyed. So they went out to try and make peace. So the rab of the community goes out, and they found a way of getting out. There's a whole story how he managed to get out, but he got out. He spoke to the general. And he wanted to explain to the general that we're happy to surrender to you, and you can take over the city. It's not unusual for the Jews to be ruled by foreign governments at that time. So let it happen again, but at least we'll have the temple and everything will be fine. He was prepared to do that, but he had to explain, but there's these Birionim, there's these ruffians, these hot-headed youths who want to fight. That's what's going on inside. So the general who they had, even the Goyim had great wisdom at that time, says to him in the form of a parable, but if you have a barrel full of oil and there's a snake inside, then in order to kill the snake, you need to break the barrel. Right? He was telling him a parable for producer, right? There's this band of ruffians, evil people, the snake, who's inside the city. But if you want to, we have to get rid of them. We're going to have to destroy the city to do it. The Gemara over there says on the page that at that time, the Rav had no answer. And I can't remember exactly what it says on the page, or it says in the commentary, that Hashem took away the answer from him. I think it says on the page, Hashem took away the answer from him. The simple answer that the Gemara gives says he could have easily answered back and said to the general, you don't have to break the barrel to take out the snake, just get a pair of tongs and take it out. That's he should have answered. It was a simple answer, and he was the Gadol Ador. A very easy answer, but Hashem took it away from him. He could have said that answer and explained a way for them to take out the troublemakers, and everything would have been fine. He wouldn't have needed to destroy the city, but he didn't have that answer. Hashem didn't want him to have that answer. Hashem had his reasons for, at that time, destroying the Beit HaMikdash. But we see from there clearly that Hashem gives us it's not in our hands whether we decide even what we're going to say. The words that just come out, especially when I'm talking now, I have no idea what I'm about to say, the next sentence that's going to come out of my mouth, I have no clue. It just comes, whatever comes. Let's do it. What do I want to say? In my subconscious already decided it, and what's his subconscious? It's just Hashem. There's no reality. It's a made up idea in order to plug the hole in the fact that it's not me doing it. So I call it subconscious because it's clearly not me, and I can't find it, and I can't show you where it exists, and there's no physical representation of it. So let's call it subconscious.
How is it in the morning when you choose to go to the Midrash to study Torah? Is you decide this moment?
Right. No.
Yeah.
I said I can go to the yeshiva. Why not?
Right. So what's the answer? So it's a very fine answer. It comes down to free choice. Because the question now is, once we learn all this, we see that Hashem is doing everything, including giving us the thoughts and the ideas and speaking for us and everything. So the question is, what's left for me? Do I exist? Is there any point in me being here? The answer is yes. But it's a very fine. What's our free choice? Our free choice ultimately is to do good or bad. Meaning, Hashem says in the Torah, I'm going to put before you the good and the bad. You choose. And that's our answers that we choose. Meaning, Hashem gives us the idea. When I wake up in the morning, should I go to the Beit Midrash? It's not me thinking that. Should I go to shul? Hashem says, Bing, should you go to shul? Now I can decide, yeah. You know what? No, let's go back to bed. Right? I've got my free choice, yes, no, at that point. But he's the one feeding me the options.
It's like, now you say, Hashem gave me the words to talk.
Right.
And you can give me the words to talk when you go to the Bible and touch. When you're not going, you cannot give me the
words to talk. Every choice I make has a consequence.
Yeah, of
course. So, but that's why we say a mitzvah leads to another mitzvah, and a very leads to another mitzvah. A good deed leads to another good deed. And a sin leads to another sin, because the path we choose then shapes our life. But at every time we're making a choice, if we have like a million different options, then each time there's another route, each time there's another, even at a very fine level, right? To when I'm speaking to you, to smile when I'm speaking, to use a higher word, a lower word, to be more stern, to be each within everything we're doing, there's a infinite number of possibilities that we have free choice over, and according to all of those choices we're shaped, is what's presented in front of us next. Right, it's like a massive game of chess, but on a infinite level. Right, wherever you move, you've now got a different choice. Now the board looks different.
It's like when the two ancients was by Atom.
Yeah.
The ancients was not eight.
Right.
So they stuck for years.
Right.
See how difficult it is to live in this world.
Nachon.
Hashem showed me.
Nachon.
It's like we can go to the left side and the right side. Yeah. Let's say
we have choice for either, and God says to us, choose the right side, choose good. I'm giving you both.
Yeah. They open both doors.
And we right.
Listen, in your example, you can choose or not choose to go to the Beit Midrash that morning. Yeah. You may not get there, your bus that you're on may break down or whatever, but you've chosen. But what happens is not in your control.
Of course, yeah. Mm.
But which is why
when I learn in the yeshiva, I learn good things. When I go, let's say, on the beach, they stay, maybe not, maybe I learn good.
But right, but each, but right, the Gemara says we're led the way we want to go, and it's true. The way we want to go, there's a whole path set out. If you want to go this way, you can go that way. And right. But we have instruction, right? We have instruction. A person shouldn't put himself in temptation. The Gemara says that there's two paths leading home, and one of them is a shortcut that it goes past women bathing. And you can choose which one you're going to choose. If you choose the one which goes past the women bathing, even if you didn't look, you still chose the one path. You still failed.
If you're going, let's say, in a certain way, you don't know there's that, and then all of a sudden there's women bathing. Then you do like that. But you shouldn't, if you know ahead of time there are women, don't choose to go that way and say, oh, I'll block my eyes.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. He's saying don't choose to be a lifeguard, even if you've been working on your eyes.
Well, right? Because
it's dangerous.
Because
ultimately, because even that's not within our hands. Right, the Yetzirah is not within our hands. The Yetzirah is God's way of showing us what we need to see. Meaning, if God decides that we're going to fail today, it doesn't matter how strong I've been in the past, right?
It's why we have to play the instincts. But when, let's say, you're 10 hours in yeshiva, you see, you keep your eyes, you go out, you can just find your 10 hours in 1 second. You have to play for this. Hashem, help me, guide me, way go home.
Right. And we're going to see that also our failures too. So it doesn't matter if I'm in yeshiva, I'm in business. The deal succeeds, the deal fails. I succeed, I fail. Our successes and failures are also from him. Right? A person who doesn't understand that, most of the world doesn't understand that. Even those of us who are trying to learn about God and understand that God exists, we have a very hard time putting our successes and failures on him. Right? We like to put them on us. Because then we...
Rabbi Lachowski said he might be or might not be here.
Okay.
If he went to the bio.
Okay. So, we have a very hard time giving up our successes and failures to Hashem. Right? Really, because we don't want to. We quite like the successes. We quite like keeping them. But they come together as a package. Right? If you think that it's down to you, so you have to take the outcome both ways. Right, you can't really decide at the end whether or not you're going to accept that as your success or failure. Right, we have to go into it. So we like the successes so much we take on the failures as well, but both of them are wrong because they're both from him.
It seems how you act in this situation when you fail.
That is an indication about whether or not we believed it was us. If we're sad, it's because we felt it was us. Okay. So everything.
Does the new yeshiva say this too? They're learning things. Are they saying that there's a problem with the eyes drifting up, going somewhere? Or is it a breath out thing?
So there's a couple of answers. First answer is I don't know, because I'm not in the Mir Yeshiva and I can't speak for them. I've never been in the Mir Yeshiva, never been in a class, and I don't know, even if I'd been there, I don't know if I'd be able to tell you what happened in the other classes. But generally speaking, it's not the area which they focus on. Why that's the case, Tov, you have to, it wouldn't be fair to give the argument of one side and not have the, right, just like in a court case, you can't give, you're not allowed to give the argument if the other side's not there to answer back. So it's not really for me to say that why they choose, if they choose, not to focus on this area. Why that is.
This is a strong focus for Breslov.
It's a strong focus for Breslov, definitely. Hasidut also generally. But Breslov is particularly on the eyes specifically. Yeah, eyes specifically. Rabbi Nachman was probably the strongest of the Gedolim in recent who have talked about this. Right, particularly because he knew that this generation was going to be the going to need it. Rabbi Nachman's advice was directed at our generation, the final generation, everything after him. Knew where it was headed. Knew that this is the generation of being wrecked by your eyes. The fact that a person can learn Torah all day long, but if he's surfing the internet, going to sites and seeing things that he shouldn't be seeing, it destroys everything. So it becomes, not only becomes worthless, it becomes negative. In some fashion, right? There's also worth to learning Torah generally, right? It's not that people should just give up and go home. The fact that they have Torah is very good, but there's a side to say, Rav Nachman writes about, and so does Rav Arush, that person who doesn't guard their eyes, or doesn't at least try to guard their eyes, not within our hands, to decide, you know what, I'm going to guard my eyes. It's not, but to try to guard my eyes and to pray on it. Person who doesn't pray on it doesn't try. So his learning and his Torah and mitzvot are very damaged by it. Very damaged by it. Also, generally speaking, a person's service as Hashem, this is not the class of Briti Shalom, but we should know that we have one engine. We have a fire burning inside of us, and it's either burning for the good stuff, or it's burning for the other stuff, and it can't do both. The reason why a person doesn't feel switched on to Hashem, doesn't feel any connection in davening, doesn't feel anything special by reading Gemara, is because my desire has been taken elsewhere. I've got a certain amount of desire, and if it's all over here, so there's nothing left over here. So the more a person can stay away from the stuff that's out there in the street, the more he's going to have to give to his davening and his learning. The person feels the difference. I recognize this myself about, where are we now? Yeah, about 8 years ago, 8.5 years ago. I was still watching movies. Didn't have a TV. I would still go out and see a new movie if it was in the vertical of the kosher movie, like a James Bond film, but they're not even kosher, right? But like a family movie. I would still go and watch the family movies in the cinema, right? So the last movie I ever saw was about 8 years ago, and it was a very innocuous movie, nothing going on in it. It was the movie about, I don't know what exactly the name was, Flight Something Something. It was about the flight that the hijackers took for and wanted to crash into the Twin Towers, and the passengers overpowered them, and it was very great. It was a wonderful movie. There was no loosely clothed women or anything, right? After that movie, I gave up movies completely. Why? Because I went to see that movie in the evening. The next morning, I came to Shacharit. I hadn't seen a movie for probably about, I don't know, 6 months, where we just made Aliyah and whatever. Came to Shacharit, opened the Siddur, stand there, Shishmona Esrei. I was completely, completely blank. Like, someone switched the light off. Like, hello? I just couldn't damn them. I mean, it was a big gift from Hashem, but he showed me that. I just couldn't damn them. I just had nothing. It was just empty. I was empty. I had no connection whatsoever to my davening. And after that, I never went and saw another movie again. Baruch Hashem. And that was before I even started learning Bereis Havaya. I had no idea, but I just made that connection myself. That, right? Because all I had was pictures of, I don't know, planes crashing and exploding and exciting. Right? But we can't have both. We want both. Our problem in this world is that it's very enticing, it's very exciting. I tell my kids want to watch TV. They want to watch at a friend's house. I would have TV at home, and I don't allow them. They've stopped asking now, but when they were younger, right? When they would go to a friend's house, and their friends would watch, a Disney movie, can I watch it? How about? I say, no. Why not? What's wrong with it? It's only Bambi, it's only whatever. It's not like... I said to them, in a way that they could understand, I think it's true, I'd say it to someone adult, that the reason I don't want you to see it is because it's too exciting. Once you see that, you're never going to pick up one of these. Why would you? Once you play computers and video games, once you see Hollywood movies, even if they're cartoons, what's to compete with? How can this ever compete with Hollywood? It's just got no chance. Why do that to yourself? Why do that to your kids? Why do that to myself? That all these flashing, wonderful, exciting things in front of my face, and then I have to sit here, word by word, it's not even moving, and it's not speaking, and it's not in colour. Right? It's not doing anything for me, and I've got to work, I'm not being fed the air, right? Why is that?
Huh? The movie, The Ten Commandments, enjoys both.
Right? You know, why should I bother reading this? I wait till the movie comes out. Right?
They've actually done lab studies with rats.
Yeah.
They wanted to compare normal rats with rats that have been conditioned with rat TV, the equivalent of children's TV.
Rat TV, yeah.
And they found out that the rats that are watching the children's TV can't function, literally.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they've literally done MRI studies on rats and found out that if you put a TV in front of a rat, or the equivalent, or a child, the child will be affected severely.
Right. Right.
I mean, brain chemistry and neurological function, everything else like that.
Right, and it's not surprising. It's you don't have to be a rocket scientist to work out the fact that ADHD is just a symptom of the fact that someone's used to having all this excitement, and then you sit them in a class and say, "Now read a book." He's like, "Where's the right?" And he can't sit still because his brain needs the brain's been conditioned to every 6 seconds another. Something else going on. Every 6 seconds they change the scene, they change the colour, the lighting, the movement, right? No wonder he's got ADHD. It's not his fault. It's your fault for putting him on TV for the last 20 years. Who knew that's the situation we live in? But now we know. The more we can wean ourselves off that, the greater we're doing for our own ability to get into the real world. You can't have both. Unfortunately, you can't straddle the fence. You can't have both and expect it to work. I can't play both ends of the, whatever the analogy is, right?
Can't burn both ends.
When the movies keep you married.
By the way, were they with the rat TV? Were they showing Mickey Mouse? What were they watching?
No, they actually
Mickey Mouse.
They had a program that stimulates the rats. They actually really did an effort on it. I have a YouTube video on GruesomeCats.com. How they actually did it. It was some detailed research. They use colors, they use lights, they use soundtracks from TV that would stimulate the rats. They really put some time and effort into doing research, and then they did, they compared. Children that were deprived, that were in the orphanage cribs in was it Romania, versus normal kids, versus kids that are on watching TV, and you can literally see the MRI differences.
Right, but you can also not only that, like bring it back. Let's bring it close to home. It is possible to see in the classroom, who's got a TV and who doesn't? Who watches movies and who doesn't? It's very obvious. It doesn't matter on how bright they are, how smart they are, right? The person who's with the sugya, who's following, who knows what's going on, is not watching TV. And the person who can't really follow and he's got a short attention span and he's all over the place and, right? You see it in, I used to study in Machon Meir, right? And I was there for a few years. In the same class, Baruch Hashem, with Rav David Sperling, and a wonderful teacher, amazing teacher. And every term they'd have new guys coming in, like from the States, and they come for 6 months, a year, 2 years, however long they came. The first couple of weeks, until they got downloaded, right? And it wasn't a question of getting used to learning, and then after a couple of weeks they got used to the learning, and now it started to make sense. No, they got... They started to, what's the word, deprogram. Right, from all the all the nonsense. You see also, right, often people, when do people make teshuva? It's an interesting fact. People sometimes make teshuva, they come back to God, right? They make teshuva when they have an illness. You don't see it much nowadays because they wreck the TV, the hospital wards. But it used to be in the past that they didn't have TV by your bed. Right. So what would happen? Same thing when people go on holiday and they didn't have TV in the old days when you went on holiday. Now every hotel room has got a TV, so it's not like you've gone away anywhere. But you remove a person from his TV screen and he starts to consider life and think about life and important stuff. And his life changes. Right? Because now he's got time to think. He hasn't got a movie going on in his head. Right? It's not because he got sick and now he's got worried that maybe he's going to die and he's worried. No, now he's got time to think. If he got sick, the same illness, but you put him back home in front of the TV, he's not going to change anything. So he's got no time to even start thinking about his life. Take away all that stuff. And that's when I can do my real thinking time. When I don't have all that nonsense, which is designed carefully to stay in my head. If it doesn't stay in my head, then I'm not going to switch on to the next episode next week. Or tomorrow. So it's designed with a cliffhanger, with an exciting storyline, right? It's meant to stay with me. And it does. If I get rid of that, my brain can now open up to the important things in life. So the more we do that, and each of us can probably do it to whatever degree, even if a person has thrown away his TV, doesn't watch any movies anymore, so he's still listening to the news, he's still looking at the newspapers, fine. So a person should still cut down. You're right, if you want to know the headlines, find out the headlines, but don't listen to all the garbage. The more I cut down, I should know that my service of God is going to improve, because my head's not going to be filled with nonsense. Right? And whether it's the nonsense of Hollywood or the nonsense of the world we live in, because the world is currently very... Right? Yeah, but maybe I need to know what's going on. Yeah, so you need to know what's going on. I heard today from people... don't listen to the news, Baruch Hashem. I heard today from people what I needed to hear. Terrible event happened. This and this is what happened. Fine. I got the details. How long did that take me to get the details? 20 seconds? That's it. Anything else is just speculation. There's nothing else to know about it. No point now switching on the news to see this one said, that one said, what's going to be, what might be, what won't be. It's a waste of time. Filling my head with junk, and not only filling my head with junk, but it's meaning that I can't fill it with the proper stuff. Right? I've only got a certain amount. You choose what I put in here. Some of it's going to be useful, and some of it's going to be just complete nonsense. All that news, comment, TV that you had, you think it has any use? Any purpose? No, it was a waste of time. Didn't do anything for me. Huh? The last 30, 40, 50 years of TV and whatever I've listened to, has it done anything for me? Yeah, maybe I learned something once from a program once that was useful, fine. If Hashem wanted me to know it, he would have found another way of telling it to me.
Huh?
Oh, fine. If Hashem wanted him to know English, he would have taught him a different way. It happened to come that way, but it's not a reason to go there. Anything I need to know, I haven't since we moved to Israel. We got the Jerusalem Post for the first year, but after that, not seen a newspaper, TV, radio, any news since. Very happy. Is it a yeah, but you need to know? Whether Hashem wants me to know, he tells me. There's enough people who do listen to that stuff, I'm going to find out. My mum's going to email me and tell me, you know what's going on? She's going to tell me, fine.
The question is, what do we tell our wives when we get home?
Why?
I don't even know whether I should even open my mouth.
So now,
speaking about that, I have chicken, turkey defrosting in my backpack.
So let's finish today and carry on tomorrow.